Number 17, report and possible discussion on issues dealing with Williamson County Regional Raw Water Line, including discussions with representatives of the following entities/cities: Chisholm Trail SED, Brushy Creek MED, City of Round Rock, Jonah SED, City of Georgetown by John Hoffman.
None of whom are here today, Mr. Chairman. The posting initially had envisioned that we would have representatives appearing on behalf of the entities that you previously mentioned, but instead we've been asked to put together a meeting to facilitate some discussion amongst those stakeholders, and we're going to do that in mid-May. So instead, we're going to give you the presentation as kind of a history lesson. Some of y'all will recognize parts of this, but it's a fairly lengthy and detailed history lesson, and it's one that probably bears repeating so we can all keep the facts straight. I'll do my best to be as timely as I can.
Thank you.
Go ahead and go to the next slide. The story really begins back in the 80s when several Williamson County entities were looking at the possibility of a raw water conveyance in between Lake Stillhouse Hollow and Lake Georgetown. Because at the time, Lake Georgetown was fully committed and equally split between the cities of Georgetown and Round Rock. And the Brazos River Authority was not taking advantage of the system order that we had in that part of our watershed at the time. So eventually, what happened was Round Rock and Georgetown began to talk about their next increment of water that they were going to need, and it was clearly going to have to come from Lake Stillhouse Hollow. They were joined by Jonah Special Utility District, and the three parties agreed to pursue a pipeline that would flow water from Stillhouse to Georgetown along with the Brazos River Authority. Through design, they were speaking with other parties, and as they got to the point of doing the construction contract, Brushy Creek Municipal Utility District and Chisholm Trail Special Utility District joined the project, and that rounded out the five customers for the Williamson County Raw Water Line that we have today. The two new parties paid the original three parties an equity payment according to the contract to join the project. Chisholm later came back and bought an additional increment of water for which they paid an equity payment as well, though there was not an agreement, an amendment to the pipeline agreement that was put in place at that time. Now, during the technical analysis to try to figure out what size of a pipeline they ought to try to install, they did some determinations based on the amount of water that they had under contract, and the number appeared to be around 42,000 acre-foot in capacity, which yielded about a 42-inch line. HDR Engineering did a study to see what effect it would have to oversize the pipeline, and what they determined is for about $3 million in additional capital cost, you could oversize the line such that it would create some operational efficiencies in how you flowed water down that pipeline, and those operational efficiencies would save you O&M cost at some point, to where you would offset the increased capital cost, so it would ended up being a wash. And the 48-inch pipeline was what was actually built. Now, for you more tenured board members, you'll remember that the Williamson County Raw Water Line installation was botched. And we had to go back working along with a new engineer and a new construction contractor and the surety company. We basically rebuilt the pipeline, spent another $20 million. The pipeline that we have in place now is a much better product than what we had in place at the time we determined that we had problems. I think it's safe to say that this board stepped up once they determined that there was a problem and put $3.5 million of the Brazos River Authority's resources on the line to make sure that those customers received the water that they had to have. But it was not an insignificant undertaking that we embraced fully, and it was one that did have some peril for us, but in the end it ended up turning out pretty well. Next slide. During the same time we were having that discussion, Round Rock was in need of more water. This was about the time that the regional water plans had begun to yield the 50-year planning horizons, and one of the things that became readily apparent was all of Williamson County was in a high growth area, but Round Rock in particular needed a significant amount of additional water to meet its long-term water needs. In 2003, they asked BRA to develop a proposal for them to bring more water through the pipeline by maximizing the Williamson County Raw Water Line. And Brazos River Authority was fully embracing the system concept and using the system order at roughly the same time. So we engaged an engineer to begin to look at the effects of maximizing the use of the pipeline. And what would happen if we managed Lake Belton along with Lake Stillhouse Hollow and Lake Georgetown as a single water supply system? And this was the foundation of what we later called our Bell House Water Strategy. Now, through the Bell House Water Strategy, we could provide another 20,000 acre-feet of water per year to address water needs in this area, as quantified by the regional water planning process. Now, we briefed y'all, the board at that time, and there was a series of slides that we did called foot stomp slides, and they quite literally had a foot with a great big stomp mark on there, and what it accentuated was the fact that when you did this initiative, we committed the Brazos River Authority to some future infrastructure. It could either be a 8-mile pipeline between Belton and Stillhouse, or it could be some other water supply strategy, including groundwater or something to be named in the future. But it was going to commit us at some point to doing water infrastructure to be able to make good on all of those contractual commitments. And this would happen somewhere there, somewhere roughly around the 2024 timeframe. So we offered, once we had y'all's blessing, to Round Rock this water that we could make available to them per their request. Round Rock, in turn, was doing a study of their own, and they took this water supply option and several others and hired HDR Engineering to come in and do an analysis. And what HDR determined was that Round Rock's best water supply option, in their eyes, was for them to go to the Colorado River Basin and to buy the remainder of the water that was available from the Colorado into the Brazos. There was a 25,000 acre-foot allotment that was made available through special legislation years ago. There was some amount of that water that was left and uncommitted, and it would be available for Round Rock. It wouldn't be everything that they needed, but there would be some increment of water that was available. Brazos River Authority, in turn, offered the water that Round Rock chose not to accept to some other Williamson County and Bell County entities. And as you can imagine, there was quite a bit of interest in that water. Roughly about the same time that those conversations were taking place, Round Rock and Georgetown started talking to each other. Georgetown was interested in turning back some of its LCRA water and interested in casting its fortunes, if you will, with the Brazos River Basin. And so Round Rock needed more water than what was available from the remaining allotment of uncommitted LCRA water. And they worked a swap whereby Round Rock would buy the uncommitted water that was left and Georgetown's LCRA water that they would turn back. Georgetown would release that water with the understanding that they would buy the rest of their water through the Brazos River Authority. Chisholm Trail also entered into this picture, and they gave up some LCRA water and took another large increment of water through the Brazos River Authority. So what ended up really happening was a swap that benefited probably more parties than the original proposal that we had put together would have benefited, in that Round Rock got what they needed, Georgetown got what they needed, and Chisholm Trail got what they needed as well. Next slide, please. Now, when that happened, we had to go back and refigure the debt allocations on the pipeline, because we have added 20,000 acre feet of additional units, if you will, that will go through the pipeline. And when we did that, John Hawes and his guys went back through and said, all right, the debt hasn't changed. We haven't taken out any more debt, but now we have more units under that debt, and they're assigned to different parties. So when we reallocate that debt, as you can imagine, when Georgetown and Chisholm Trail added capacity, they picked up responsibility for debt, and their debt payments went up. Round Rock, Brushy Creek Mud, and Jonah Water Sub all remained at the same level as far as the pipeline was concerned, and so their responsibility for debt payments went down. And you can see Round Rock's in the first thing there. This first year of debt, they saved over $250,000 bucks, and Jonah saved $25,000 and Brushy Creek $43,000. By the time it's all said and done, they'll all save a significant amount of money. That Round Rock alone saves over $6 million. Next slide. Now, while we were working on the different transactions to facilitate these swaps, we'd already signed the water supply agreements and we began to work on the O&M budget, and part of what we had to do was to look at what we thought was going to be an equity payment in between Georgetown and the other pipeline customers and Chisholm Trail and the other pipeline customers. We'd already finished doing Chisholm Trails and sent them their bill. They'd sent us a check, and we were working on calculating what Georgetown's equity payment was going to be. And Georgetown asked kind of a simple and fundamental question. And they said, BRA, it looks to us in reading this this contract that equity payments are only for additional participants, which is a term of art in the contract. And we're an original participant. And so it doesn't look to us like we need to make an equity payment or that the contract even anticipates that we would make an equity payment. We went back and took a look at that, showed it to Laura Lee and our internal counsel. They reviewed the materials and said, yes, in fact, that the language in the agreement could be read that way. We referred it on to Chuck over at our bond counsel and said, hey, Chuck, you know, have you ever seen anything like this? What does it look to you like? And Chuck said, yeah, I can see where they're reading the language in the agreements this way. And so we went back to Georgetown and said, yes, we understand why you're taking the position that you're taking. We could read the agreements in the same way that you put forth. And so we told the other customers that was true. And as you can imagine as well, Chisholm Trail said, well, if that's true, then we became a participant when we joined on way back when, and we shouldn't have to make an equity payment either. And so we wrote them a check and gave them their equity payment back. And then the fun and games started. Go ahead to the next slide. When we sat down with the customers and shared this with them, the first reaction was, well, that's just plain unfair. That's just not fair. And we walked them through the language. We walked them through the language in the contracts. And this, I've said this before, those of you that heard this briefing before, these agreements are really obtuse and difficultly worded, and they've just got some stuff in there. They're not, you know, looking back is easy. You know, 2020 vision is always nice to have, but I tell you what, they're really not worded as clearly as they could be, and this is one of them. So they said this isn't fair, and really what they came down on is this, and this was probably espoused by Round Rock as much as anybody. BRA, irrespective of how the contracts can be read, somebody needs to pay us something for this transaction that just took place. And it's up to you to figure out how that works, but somebody needs to pay us for this. So we sat down with the customers and had a series of meetings with different configurations of them, tried to walk them through all of this, because the contract itself really only allows for one method for arbitrating disputes, and that is arbitration, which is a binding process that everybody's going to be wed to when you get to the end of it. And the parties themselves even agreed after they had a chance to talk to their councils that they didn't want to go down that road till they absolutely had to. They wanted to try to work this out voluntarily first. A solution was thrown out there by Georgetown and Round Rock initially that said, well, what if the Brazos River Authority looked at making this a system asset, like we feel like it probably should have been in the first place, and we get out of all this debt payment stuff, BRA just bills us for it as a system asset. And we think, BRA, you can do that for $13, $14 an acre foot increase in the system rate. We went back and took a look at that, and sure enough, they were right. About $13, $14 increase in the system rate would yield the kind of resources necessary to do that. The problem is that's a fairly substantial increase in 1 year in the system rate, and in effect, it would stop you from being able to do any other project with the system as the basis of your finance for that project for some lengthy period of time afterwards. It was a good deal for you if you were one of the pipeline customers. It probably wasn't a very good deal for you if you were the rest of the system. And the other part of that was, it was a deal that we had already had in place for a number of years. It had been functioning for some time. Someone would legitimately ask the question, okay, well, why are you doing this now, this many years after the fact? I can understand you may be envisioning doing this in the first place, but now? So we didn't really get very far with that. The next thing that happened was we had some real close discussions with Round Rock, where Round Rock basically said, all right, guys, I got what you're saying on the system asset issue, but here's where we are. It looks to us like y'all have gone in and you have sold something that belongs to us without talking to us about it. And we were kind of okay with that when we thought we were going to get an equity payment. But now that you've made a determination that the contracts don't allow for an equity payment, that just sure doesn't seem right to us. So we would really like for y'all to either give us our pipeline capacity back or pay us something for what you've committed. Plus, as we think about it now, you guys have taken something that we built for efficiency, in that when we went from a 42-inch pipeline to a 48-inch pipeline, the only reason why we did that was so we could save that O&M cost over time. And now y'all have gone on and filled it with water, or at least in some point in the future, you filled this with water. So all that O&M savings that we were going to get, our efficiency capacity, if you will, for the pipeline, you've just committed without our knowledge. So we got a problem with that. And they even pointed to a provision in the contract language that says, well, the Brazos River Authority can't add customers to the contract and increase the monthly charges without talking to the customers first. That was an interesting argument that they made about O&M, and it was one that we had to go back and really take a look at, because as you think about it, there is a curve as far as the amount of energy that it takes to put water in a pipeline. And it's true to say that the first acre foot of water that you put in that pipeline takes less energy than the last acre foot of water that you put in the pipeline. And for a period of time, it's really not that much in the way of additional demand on electricity to push an acre foot of water through the pipeline. But about midpoint on, if you look at a plotting of the electrical demand on a curve, what you'll see pretty quickly is for every acre foot of water that you put in the pipeline additional, it takes that much more energy to flow the water. So there is a point sometime in the future where when you go from a 43,000 acre foot amount of volume in the pipeline to a 61,000 acre foot of volume of water in the pipeline, that there will be some additional O&M electrical costs that will be ascribed to that additional increment of water. And at some point, you're going to have to think through what that means. In this particular instance, next slide, it's a little bit different, though, because we had, as a part of those expenses that we talked about, the debt costs. And you remember that chart that I just showed you where Round Rock saves $250,000 in the first year over the life of the thing is $6.3 million in debt savings. Even assuming they don't invest that in anything at all, which I don't know of any city worth their salt that would get cash resources that they don't invest somewhere wisely because their financial considerations are such that they have to, it would be many, many years out into the future before whatever incremental increases in O&M costs they might receive would eat into that $6.5 million in savings. So we kind of had to say, where are you harmed? And what, maybe like 2050, 2060, something out there, there's something we're going to need to discuss. But as far as right now is concerned, all we can see is where you've saved money off us, off the transactions that have taken place that were mutually beneficial for all the parties that were involved. What this chart here is something that that Brad and David Wheelock and their guys put together, and it's a drought year scenario based on historic hydrology. And what they did was they projected the flows based on the demands from the customers out here, that white line coming up, with different capacity levels within that pipeline, so you can see about what point out in the future that line's utilized some of the assumptions for O&M might suggest. And as you can see, we're well out towards 2030 before any of this is really even much of a consideration. Next slide. You also have to remember when we talk about those monthly charges that we lop all that together. So yes, the contract documents talk about monthly charges. They also include debt service costs with O&M costs as a part of those monthly charges. And it's listed in there specifically. The big picture view of all of this, in my mind, really is this. Currently, most of the participants are saving money as a consequence of the Bell House water sales strategy, and there is a real question as to whether or not there is ever an overall negative impact felt by any of the three parties that didn't add water to the pipeline. Next slide. We didn't post this for action so we could have this kind of historical discussion to get y'all caught up. Staff believes strongly that the parties were all aware of the implications of fully committing the capacity of the raw water line before this last round of contracts were entered into. That everybody was aware of the fact that we were going to put additional 20,000 acre foot of water into the pipeline. And as the fact that we had been asked by Round Rock to do this in the first place, we figured that they were aware of what the implications of it were before they asked us to do it. These O&M and equity issues really only arose after it was determined and after the issue was raised by Georgetown that there was a technicality in the contract language that essentially said they didn't have to make an equity payment. And everything else, as far as I'm concerned, has really kind of come out of that disagreement. So while technically there is a price to be paid in O&M costs in the future for putting that additional amount of water in that pipeline, it's very unclear as to what point there is ever actually a harm felt by anyone as a part of that process. What is clear, though, is it has become a contract dispute of the first class. There is likely going to have to be third parties brought into this before it is said and done, because I'm hoping that we'll have a good meeting in mid-May when we bring the parties together. But someone's going to have to give more than what they're given right now, and it's not a given that that's going to happen. So we could very well, Brazos River Authority might have to engage legal counsel to represent us in some type of an arbitration agreement, arbitration meetings. And, you know, with arbitration, we don't know where that's going to go, and it is binding. That is something that the Brazos River Authority and the other parties would be bound to, and we don't have any control over what's going to happen on that. So that meeting that we're going to have here in a couple weeks is going to be real critical to try to work through this with the pipeline participants. But it's one that really everybody has a vested interest in working out, because everybody benefits so much off of it now and going forward into the future. Their futures really in this part of Williamson County really rest on the capabilities provided to them by that pipeline. That's all the information that I had on this particular agenda item, Mr. Chairman. I'm answering any questions that you have.
How big was that payment from Georgetown going to be?
Sir?
How big was the payment from Georgetown? Did y'all calculate?
No, I don't know off the top of my head. $1.5 million spread out over the three parties.
This, like everything else, is one of those multifaceted, difficult problems that has people that came, it's kind of an inherited thing. People have selective memory, people have no memory. People weren't here. People weren't there. Now it's interpretation, and it goes back to the socialization. At one time, whenever you mentioned BRA in Williamson County, it was a dirty word. And by virtue of the board stepping up to the pipeline, that's helped us. John Baker, John Hoffman, and all these people down there working on a daily basis, making contacts, that's all helped us. But it's still, and there's another issue going on down there right now, that the difference between about how LCRA and BRA is going to how they're going to interact. John told you they had legislative interjection to get LCRA into the basin. They recently had a LCRA board member. I've talked to their CEO, and they're looking to say, how can we extract ourselves from Williamson County, is kind of the guidance that they're looking at. So that's all going to play in there. The customers love to have us both down there, because they could play us off each other and try to get the best deal that they could on whatever things they were trying to do. So it's a very complex, very political, and an ongoing issue.
John, thank you. Phil, let's take just a quick few breaks.